Educating South Florida, celebrating over 30 years, Hot Talk continues to be the pulse of South Florida. Relevant, engaging, informative. Now, here's your host, Jill Tracy.
A part, a large part, of our attitude towards things is conditioned by opinions and emotions, which we unconsciously absorb as children from our environment. That is Albert Einstein. Good evening and welcome. I am Jill Tracy. Thank you for joining us tonight on Hot Talk, South Florida's number one community affairs show. Each and every Sunday night from 11 to 1 a.m., we highlight the achievements and discuss the challenges of the world with you and an engaging panel of guests. And I invite you to join the conversation, 888-550-9105. My jewels tonight are from Albert Einstein, scientist and one of the great minds of mankind, who wrote The Negro Question in 1946. In it, he offers answers, at least his answers, to why America's sense of equality and human dignity is mainly limited to men. Take a guess. I'll give you 2 seconds. Of white skin. Saying, quote, "Even among these, there are prejudices of which I, as a Jew, am clearly conscious. But they are unimportant in comparison to the attitude of the whites towards their fellow citizens of darker complexion, particularly towards Negroes. The more I feel an American, the more this situation pains me. I can escape the feeling of complicity in it only by speaking out." I wish I could send that to Donald Trump supporters. My guests tonight are familiar with living double lives, tree lives. In fact, being fluent in both Caucasian, African American, as well as their native tongue. Since the beginning of this campaign, Donald Trump is trafficked in all things vile and all things racial, only to turn around this weekend and say, what, who, me? Of course not. Let's get on with it. Yes, he was born here. All right, moving on. No, Donald. It don't go down like that. First, you try a black female pastor in her church. Then you try Obama. Okay. We're going to need you to have several seats. And listen to tonight's show because you, too, Donald Trump, can learn a lot from an immigrant. Thank you very much. Big Man Kelly on the 1 and 2s tonight. How are you, sir?
I'm feeling good, Jill. I'm good.
I'm glad. Oh, that's right. You don't have a mic right now, but
I can project.
You project very well. Well, one of our guests is on their way up, but we will get started with Alex Delsume, who is here, has an outstanding record of public service and prides himself on his dedication to his community. Born in Haiti, raised in North Miami, Alex is a teacher, a small business owner, and an adjunct professor. At only 23, he established Alex Delsume and Associates Marketing and PR, Champions for Youth Causes, has taught in the Miami-Dade public school system for almost 2 decades, and Alex is pursuing a doctoral degree in educational leadership, focusing on transformative leadership at the University of England. The first black to serve as city clerk in North Miami, he held this distinction of the youngest and the first Haitian American elected city clerk in the United States of America. Please welcome Alex Delsume, Vice Mayor Alex Delsume, to you.
Oh my God, I like how you say that.
Oh well. Welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
I am blessed and highly favored. I'm so glad to have you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here among some good friends, Marlon Hill.
Yes, indeed.
You know?
It's
you notice how he didn't bring us any.
Okay.
Just a 20 piece.
And it's gone already. Listen,
Mr.
he just
Otto,
literally just
doing,
jumped
sir?
Off a plane, so yeah. we will give him
we'll
a pass.
Him.
Marlon Hill is a partner with Hamilton Miller and Burstnet. I pronounce that person's
Hamilton
name.
Hamilton Miller's good, man.
There we go. Experienced corporate intellectual property and government transactions lawyer for over 20 years. He serves as outside counsel to entrepreneurs, corporations, and sovereign governments. He is past president of the Caribbean Bar Association, former vice chair of the Miami Foundation, board member of the Orange Bowl Committee, and Miami Book Fair. He is a weekly commentator in the People's Politics on Caribbean Rhythms, an op-ed contributor to the Miami Herald and Sun Sentinel, as well as recurring commentator on Channel 10's This Week in South Florida. He is Marlon Hill. Busy much?
We'll go on, black girl magic. That's my trilingual.
There you go. Black girl magic all day long. Speaking of our black girl magic, I hope she's got a little helicopter bringing her over here now.
Don't count on it.
Okay. Not on a bet. Our next guest, Otto Bolden, became a record-breaking 2-time world sprint champion by the age of 18, a feat never before accomplished. At UCLA, he set records and 2 NAACP. See where my man is tonight, too. NCAA sprint titles, breaking the NCAA 100-meter dash record, one of the world's top 3 fastest men for 7 consecutive years. He became 4-time Olympic medalist, a 4-time world championship medalist, and world 200-meter champion. He retired from track at the 2004 Olympics in Athens, Greece, and became a senator in his native of Trinidad. Mm-hmm. An Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, Otto is fresh off the 2016 Olympics, and he's training some of the fastest young people in the world through his Born to Do It Foundation in Miramar, Florida. Please welcome Otto Bolden to Hot Talk.
Very good to be here. Thank
yes,
you for
indeed.
The extensive resume reading.
You know, well, you know, when you've got that much going on, one just has to share it all. And our other guest, our dear Suzanne McDowell, is somewhere in the ethers. So welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for having
us. Yes. Now, Marlon, you're fresh off a plane.
Fresh off a plane, coming through immigration.
Oh. Yeah. Did it take a little longer than you?
No. I'm coming back from Houston, the other part of America, in Texas.
Oh, okay.
Texas. Our law firm was participating in NAMWOLF, which is the National Association of Minority-Owned Law Firms, because we, I'm a part of a black-owned law firm, and, we're trying to get some business from, making sure these corporations give us our fair share.
Yeah.
We're just as good as the rest of them.
Amen. So how was it?
Very productive, very productive. Black-owned, Hispanic-owned, Asian-American-owned law firms from all across the country. The annual meeting was held in Houston this year. Had a chance to meet with a number of great corporations that are making the commitment to allocate a part of their budget to our law firms. And we were there present and making the case for us. We have 50 lawyers now, and many of them are immigrants and non-immigrants.
Okay.
But it was great. Is
that how they go? Like, let's say Target.
Target has a legal department.
Basically,
Target has legal issues. Someone slips and falls in Target. There's going to be a claim. Someone has a breach of contract. And then the legal department either decides internally to take care of the case or to send that work out to law firms. And so someone has to make a decision. Where do we send the work? And if we are not on the radar screen, most of the work goes to persons that don't look like you and me.
So that is one of the great benefits of being of membership.
Of NAMWOLF.
Let's say that.
Correct.
That's a benefit of membership. Yeah. Oh, okay. So did you pitch business while you were there?
While we were there all day, all night, from all week. While everyone was having fun in D.C. and, hobnobbing with the president and drinking champagne, we were working on hustling for business.
Well, you're going to be in Washington next week, though, right?
Unfortunately, a great college friend and high school friend of mine passed away from heart failure. No. And so I canceled those plans. Mm. Unfortunately, we can't be at the dedication at the museum on Saturday. So I'll have to get a rain check with BO and MO.
And well, it is definitely a must-see. It is definitely on my bucket list. Huggy Lowdown on Friday. We had him as a part of Hot Live, and he'd been to the second, previews, and he was just overwhelmed.
Everyone should become a member of the museum.
Yes.
No matter how small. You can even have a payment plan over a number of years as a lifetime member. So my wife, Carla, and I, we became lifetime members.
Oh, how much was it?
It's $80-something dollars a month for 5 years. So
that's awesome. Mm. Yeah. And again, benefits of membership. And welcome to the studio, Reza.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
Everything is good, man.
That's good. Where were you? Like,
I.
Okay.
No. I was doing the Lord's work.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to have you here. So I started the show reading a piece from that Albert Einstein wrote called The Negro Question, right? 1946. A friend of mine, Henry Crespo, turned me onto that. And there were just so many, after I read it, there were just so many points that I thought just really kind of form, the basis of our conversation here today. So I wanted to share that with you. Now, everybody knows who you are. I was going to say, you can tell the people who you are, but everybody knows who you are. Do you have a call? Big Man Kelly, was that a call? Very good. Okay, so anyway, Einstein goes on to say in his piece, many a sincere person will answer, our attitude towards Negroes is the result of unfavorable experiences which we've had by living side by side with them. Negroes in this country, they are not our equals in intelligence, sense of responsibility, or reliability. The only other nationality I've never heard. Growing up, I never heard any such talk as that. But I will say that growing up, I'm from Detroit, so nationalities or immigrants from other places that I knew were Polish, Chaldean, and Nigerian. And, that was sort of the makeup. And then Americans in South Florida, in Detroit. And Nigerians were very revered because they were very intelligent. They all had degrees. They were all, you know, in school. You know, they came from really regal families, and they threw the bomb parties. And as it followed when I got down here for college. And when I got to Miami, though, I found it very different between African Americans and just about every other group of color. One of the first things I noticed being on campus was people calling me red. It was the first thing. I was like, what is that? I'm not red, I'm brown. As a matter of fact, I'm paper bag brown because my grandmama told me I was. But that was a slang for, you know, we considered red. Okay. But one thing that did stand out glaringly to me is that people made fun, even the younger people made fun of the Haitian kids. And I thought, well, now that's odd. And as I've been here over the years, I realized that it is, and I just did a summer program for kids. Now I'm, you know, a good 20 years out of
looking good
out of high school, college. And I was mentoring girls in high school, and I realized that the same thing still applies. So I'm wondering, you know, based on Einstein's thesis, what is it that? And Kelly, maybe you can chime in on that. What is it that allowed Black Americans to be so mean? Would be the best word. Towards others. You want to?
Yeah. Well, you know there's a saying that hurt people.
Yes.
And so if you are an oppressed people and they bring something new to the table, someone who you perceived that could be lower on the totem pole than you, then you get to exercise the things that have been exercised on you.
Upon you.
And I'm here to tell you, the Haitians weren't the first. You know, Jamaicans were the first.
I'm just saying when I got here.
Okay. So in the 50s and 60s, it was Jamaicans that were go back to on the banana boat and all of that.
Right.
Okay. So It progresses. Everybody new gets it. So the Haitians got it by the time you got to the 80s. The Haitians were new.
Right.
But I will adhere to tell you that Haitians probably had it worse than anyone.
Anybody
that was new.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because remember, if you go back to the 80s, not only were they new, but then in this sick and twisted way, they tried to link AIDS and Haitians together. Absolutely. So you had you had an epidemic that had people in fear, and then you had this new entity of Haitian immigrants coming in, and you bond those two things together, plus with the hurt people. And I'm here to tell you that Haitian people had an uphill road to go, plus the fact that most people of color do not understand history or know history.
Well,
to revere Haitians for their deep history in the revolution and the struggle of the African diaspora.
Right.
So you add all that together, I say that Haitians had the hardest road to go as immigrants in this country.
No.
Well, you know, we did. I grew up in New York, and it was a little bit different. You know, we had our own struggle there. And by the time I got here and the stories that I heard, not only we had to struggle, and I think you eloquently put it well, but folks who doesn't understand their own history added on to, hey, we all were brought on a boat. You know, Haitians were not, you know, we were part of the French Revolution, et cetera, et cetera. And we've been fighting since 1804. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of resentment because I had folks who told me, well, although you guys were the first Black, I'm saying, what do you mean we were the first Black? This should be an accomplishment of all of us,
mm-hmm.
Black, because Frederick Douglass at one point almost took all of us back to Haiti.
Right.
Because of the treatment
right.
of African American in America.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if when you put history, having a sense of their own struggle, not understanding their own history, yes, there was some frustration.
Right.
Because a lot of the Haitian, they came and when I say struggle, Jill, you had folks who came and they didn't eat in order to send their, you know, to get their family back. And once the family was here, you had to stay in a couple apartments. And education then was your only route. So you had a sense of education. That was it. Because we knew that the struggle was life. The kids were getting it in the school, at work, and everywhere else. So you had no other choice but to kind of believe in education and round yourself around that. Hopefully something good will come out of it.
Well, I think, I have a call. I'll take that. Hi, welcome to Hot Talk. Dollar Bill, y'all. Hi, Dollar Bill. Welcome to Hot Talk.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm glad you got this engaging panel on tonight, because what they're talking about, they done pretty ready to what I've been preaching for the last year and a half talking on your show. The reason why the Haitians got the part about everybody, because you got to understand history. See, the Haitians did something in the Western Hemisphere no other slaves did. They beat the white man at a game that he thought he mastered. They beat him at psychology and overthrew it and threw him out of Haiti. Ever since then, they've been mad at the Haitians. So what happened when they did it so quick, and what happened, they didn't get sent to race mix as long as they did with the Haitians. So most of the Haitians have the direct physical characteristics of what God said black people ought to look like. So when they first came to America, they just got associated AIDS with the Haitian people. That's to keep the dumb black American people, you know what I'm saying, didn't want to be around, because the Haitians got the real knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Like, go back and text your out. Okay? You got some interference from slave master, and you got what God did to the people, which is nappy hair. I'm trying to tell the people, embrace what God did, as opposed to the interference. You got the Obama, Louis Farrakhan, Alicia Keys. That's our problem. Now, wake them up, and nap it up.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dollar Bill. I appreciate that.
I love on that subject. I say God made the black people, and he gave them nappy hair.
Amen.
I said the good hair comes from the interference.
Okay.
That's
the from
Slave Master. Yes,
Dollar
Bill. Yeah, boy. See a big man kid. I heard he got that good hat.
I'm going to tell you, Dollar Bill going to take the show.
Okay. He is one of us, Dollar Bill. Oh, my goodness. So coming up, Paulette Sims Wimberly sends congratulations to Miami Gardens mayoral candidate James B. Wright, and the Supreme Court orders do-overs in Miami Gardens mayoral election. Yeah. We'll talk about that and so much more. Stay tuned. I am Jill Tracy, and this is Hot Talk. Or not one of us.
Call Hot Talk at 888-550-9105.
Esa negrita que va caminando, esa negrita tiene su tumbao, y cuando la gente la va mirando, ella baila de lado, también apretado, apretado, apretado.
La negra tiene tumbao,
azúcar, azúcar,
y no camina de lado.
Si quieres llegar derecho, mejor camina de frente, para que no hayan tropiezos y vengas y te lamentes. Si quieres llegar primero, mejor se corre despacio. Disfruta bien de la vida, cariño, aunque tomando medidas. Azúcar.
La negra tiene tumbao.
Tiene tumbao, tiene tumbao.
Y no camina de lado.
Y no camina
and
de lado.
Yes.
De lado.
La negra tiene
yes, we're back. Yes, we're back. No worry. Welcome back to Hot Talk. Never miss an episode of Hot Talk with the Hot 105 app. You can download it now for Android and iPhone. Next week on Hot Talk, our new reelected Sheriff Scott Israel, the amazing brothers from the Fathers MIA, and Keith Velez is here to celebrate the 30th anniversary of his father, China Velez's legacy, the Sunshine Jazz Organization. He'll be curating the music. Big Man Kelly and I did the music tonight. Mm-hmm. I always do the music, but you know, I'm like, you know what? It'll be really fun to have other people kind of like share the playlist and, you know, do the playlist. I know you were traveling, so I didn't hit you up, but next time I will hit you up to do the playlist. So next week, Keith Vallez will be doing the playlist. Tonight, you may have made fun of your Haitian classmates when you were a kid, but you could learn a lot from an immigrant. My guest tonight, attorney Marlon Hill, Olympian Otto Bolden, Circle of Wands owner who just flew in on the red eye. Suzanne McDowell, North Miami Vice Mayor, Alex Del Sumea, and Reza. What a guan boy.
Everything is good. He's so foolish.
Listen, I tell y'all, I was asleep when the boat stopped in Jamaica. I was supposed to get off, but I was asleep. Suzanne McDowell is the CEO, president of Circle of One Marketing, a full-service marketing and advertising agency whose clients include Jasmine Gardens, the Children's Trust, Miami Heart Gallery, and Make Healthy Happen, the local arm of First Lady Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign to end childhood obesity. Also under the circle is One United Bank, the largest African-American-owned bank in the United States, Urban League of Greater Miami, Burger King, and many, many others. The circle has been named one of the top 100 minority businesses by the Greater Miami Chamber of Commerce for 7 consecutive years. The best of Miami in entrepreneurship from Miami Today, Corporation of the Year from the Women's Chamber of Commerce. She is a blogger for the Huffington Post. And Suzanne, who considers herself Jamaican, is the proud mother of her polar opposite, a surprisingly calm, patient, and well-adjusted child by the name of Sydney Alicia. Please welcome Suzanne McDowell.
Hi, Jill.
How are you?
Just scary reading my bio.
You know. So scary. Welcome.
Scary.
Welcome,
thank
welcome.
You. Okay, I'm so sorry for being late. Lightly fell asleep because I flew in today, and boy, are my arms tired.
Tired. Woo! But I'm pumped.
That's so immigrant of you.
I know it is. I just want to be an American.
So you were in Washington.
I was in Washington. I went to the CBC as a guest of One United Bank. We did Bank Black CDC. And
awesome.
I was so excited. I was on the flight with Congresswoman Wilson.
She's
so cutie. She's so adorable. You should have seen her yesterday.
Did she have on her hat?
She had on her hat. She had on her cute little AKA outfit. But yesterday, last night at the CBC, at the gala, she came across the stage in this like off-the-shoulder black and silver thing with the hat.
Right.
I was like, where are you going, Miss Fabulous?
Okay.
So she's, yeah.
So anyway, it was a good night.
It was a great night. It was so beautiful. And the president was there. And
yeah, I watched it on CNN.
Yes. And he was there. And then Michelle was there looking resplendent. As always.
Awesome.
And Hillary Clinton, number 45, to call her.
Okay. There you go. Claim it in the name of Jesus. So when we left for the break, Alex actually was explaining to Razor what happened. So you missed it.
Yes, she did.
That there will be a new election in... you missed the whole Haitian thing, too. Yeah. there'll be
Miami
another
Gardens.
Election in Miami Gardens.
Oh, no. I mean, I didn't miss it, but, you know, because, you know, the city of Miami Gardens is my client. And, you know, mayor is my friend.
Okay.
Of course I... And I also handled all of his media buying, so I'm absolutely aware.
So, but he won by 69%.
Yeah,
so.
He won by 69%, and he'll win again by 69%.
So do you think it was just a matter of principle for James? Wright? I mean,
it's what the Supreme Court said that must happen. I don't think James Wright had any say, and both of them are friends of mine. But they found probable cause that they actually strike a part of the rule for qualifying candidates. If you present a check to the clerk or the actual stature say within the time period of your qualifying period, if the check should bounce for whatever reason,
right,
and it's, you know, they could present it back to you and you need to make it right before qualifying finish. However, in his case, this had nothing to do with him. There was money in the account, and apparently the check never been presented to the bank or something like that. So the Supreme Court found if it's an error that's made, that has nothing to do with the person, it's beyond their control, then it's legally right that they re-up the election. And this is precedent because this is going to happen, I guess, in every other other race to follow.
Somebody bounce the check.
Well, no, not really. That's the problem.
No, because you said the check ain't right.
No, this is bad. We did have an incident in Opa-locka. We have a new commissioner one of the commissioners' $316 check was bounced, and the other Hispanic person that was running against him is just now the new commissioner. Mm. And that
because the check bounced
and his qualifying period was over.
Was over.
Yeah, so. And that's not good.
If you bouncing $316, I don't need you around the city's money. That's what I'm saying. $316 plus?
That's a good thing. Not in this case.
A whole nother thing.
I'm just talking about the 316 player. And we ain't talking about John 316 either. We're talking about 316.
Like, if you can't afford $316,
You shouldn't run for office.
Can you manage multi-millions of dollars?
I don't know. What do you think? 888-550-9105. So our topic tonight is you could learn a lot from an immigrant. And we were talking about the experience. When I moved down here, my experience with immigrants had been Polish, Chaldeans, and Nigerians. And then when I got here, I realized that there were a lot of, what I thought were Black Americans, but they weren't. But they spoke these different languages, and they spoke French. And I was like, oh, my God, it's so sexy. And then I quickly realized, but wait a minute, they don't all get along. And how Black Americans were just really kind of shady to Haitians, to say the least. And all of the, women who saw Stella got her groove back, wanted to be with a Jamaican man. So I had to learn the lay of the land here quickly. No, I'm serious. This is, a lot of just as simplistic as Donald Trump wants to make the whole idea of immigrants and immigration seem. I found very much we did a lot of the African-American, the Black community, or, black, brown, whatever you want to call it, we did the same thing. It's very simplistic and, very un-nuanced from what you would expect from such a wide range of people of color. Your experiences?
We tend to forget that the city of Miami, the charter was signed by people from the Bahamas. Immigrants.
Right.
Right. Well, 100 years ago, right?
Well, America wants to forget a lot about immigrants, that we are all, unless you are Native American, you're an immigrant, pretty much.
An immigrant is someone who comes to the United States to live permanently.
Right.
Right. To live permanently.
Right.
Right. And if you're a non-immigrant, you're here temporarily.
Right. Right.
As a visitor, as a student. And unfortunately, we have well over millions of
too much going on in here.
People who are undocumented that don't have the right papers to be here either temporarily or permanently, right? And that has happened in America for decades.
Right.
For decades that has happened. Right. My family came here. My mom, she followed her two sisters. She was the last of three to come here in 1985. And she basically came in and said, we're moving from Jamaica to Miami. And, as a teenager, you just got to move.
So what were your thoughts about moving? Did you most Americans think that immigrants move to America for a better life.
I had no choice in the matter, but...
what did you think? I know you didn't have a choice, Marlon Hill. What were your thoughts about
experience.
That?
I mean, you have your friends, you're in school, you're having fun, and you're going to leave, the country that you consider your home, and then you move to the United States. So when I came here to South Miami Heights in Cutler Ridge, you have to adjust, you have to meet new friends, and fortunately for me, Miami Southridge Senior High School in South Dade was a very diverse... school population. We had lots of other kids just like myself, so it was easy to adjust, even though in one of my first classes I stood up to answer a question and the teacher asked me a question, all the kids started to laugh. I'm like, why are you laughing? I mean, teacher asks you a question, you stand up and you address the teacher, and not something that what kids do. And then my now law partner, Michelle, who was born in Brooklyn, but she was the last to be born in her family who's of Jamaican descent, she didn't think it was funny. So she kind of straightened out all the folks, all the guys who were laughing at me in the classroom, and we're friends to this day, 30 years later.
I love that. So you're, Omar. Okay, I'm sorry. Hi, Omar. Hi, welcome to Hot Talk. Omar? Welcome to Hot Talk. Are you there?
Hello.
Hello, Omar. Welcome to Hot Talk.
Yeah, I think you kind of do a misjustice for a lot of blacks in America when you say that, you know, blacks, you speak generally about how blacks feel about other immigrants or Haitians or whatever, because I've never felt like that in my life. And I've always been pro-black regardless of wherever you come from. So when you say blacks, I think you're generalizing, and I don't think it's a good thing to generalize our people to say that a lot of us treat Haitians or immigrants that way, because we have to also look at the fact that a lot of immigrants come to this country and they come with their own idiosyncrasies and their own prejudices against African-Americans that live here too. So I don't think that we can discount that part of the...
we haven't gotten to that part of the show yet, Omar. But haven't gotten to that part. But let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Would it not be, has it not been your experience that that Haitian people have been are often treated differently and in the black community? Have you seen that?
I can only speak for myself. I have not seen that, and I can only speak for the people that I'm around.
Okay.
I see that with black people, period. So it's not even the fact that with Haitians, it's how we treat one another, period. So your ethnic, where you come from, I think, is almost irrelevant. And what I wanted to touch on was really the Dahl test, which I'm really trying to get people mm-hmm. to go to YouTube and look at. And in 2011, all children are still picking the white Dahl.
The white Dahl.
And so this should be very disturbing to us, because all the black children are still picking the white doll as good and as beautiful. And these are children, our children that are 2011. So what are we as a people not doing that we still have our children picking the white doll better than them, that the white doll is smarter than them? So we have to address that issue, because that mindset of self-hate, and it's not only with white kids, it's with all kids. The experiment showed that it was all kids. So if they feel like that already in 2011, when they get 10, what are they going to feel like? And when they get 11 and 15 and 20 and 25?
Right. So well, that study's probably done every 20 years. And in fact, it is. And that's really kind of what we're talking about tonight, in terms of within our community, we have our own issues and of divisions that go across the lines of ethnicity, or, you know, or where we're from. That's what we're discussing. The Dahl test, that's a whole nother show, Omar. But I was in that hairdresser Thursday, and the woman was, you know, beside herself, because she had just taken her child to the dollar store, and there was a brown Dahl and a white Dahl, and the child wanted the white Dahl. And she, you know, we had a whole discussion about that. But that is, you know, that is...
I saw a little girl in Publix. What was that, like a couple of days ago? It was this little white girl, and she had a brown doll. She had a black doll.
Nice.
It was really cool. Kimberly and I were in the grocery store, and I'm like, is that a little girl with a white doll? And, of course, I wanted to say something, but I didn't, because I wanted it to be normal.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that we... Well, we are we there? Oh, okay. I think that we are approaching a time, we want to be approaching a time where it is normal. So, Suzanne, what was your experience? And I want to go to Otto as well. Your experience growing up. Did you grow up around African Americans?
Well, so my father is a very, very, very Jamaican man, was a very, very Jamaican man. And my mother's a Southern Belle. So, I mean, my mother's mm-hmm. a debutante, homecoming queen, you know, sorority girl, the whole thing, and she was
debutante,
the whole thing. She was raised in like that very, you know, 1950s thing where you were trying to get ahead. And my grandmother was a counselor. My grandfather was an insurance agent, and she met and married my dad and fell in love. And then my dad was being called, you know, all kinds of stuff over here as a maxillofaciologist. And he said, he actually applied for the army and got waitlisted. And said he had to leave because he was like he was gonna cuss somebody out, so because of the way he was treated as a, you know, as a doctor,
right?
And so he went back to Jamaica, and then my mom and my dad split up, and my mom took me with her. So she actually stole me, but that's another story. But so anyway, all that to say is that I ended up like being both and neither. So I am both. I am a Jamaican. I'm an American, and I'm neither, because if I go to Jamaica, they kind of look at me like, you know, you're that, you have that American twang. And then over here, you know, people look at me as a Jamaican, like I'm not really an American, but because I'm both and I'm neither.
Right.
It's very, it's a very strange, because I'm equally both.
Right. So, so Otto, has that been, you know, you're from Trinidad. Has that been your experience as well?
It has been. And I can identify with both of them, because I had the same thing when I moved to high school in New York from Trinidad at 14, where, yeah, like an idiot, I stood up to answer the teacher some question that the teacher had asked, which is what you do in the Caribbean. You have to be on your feet when you're answering the question. And I remember, it's funny that Martin brought that back up, because that was exactly my experience, where, you know, the entire class is laughing at you because they're like, what planet are you from where you do this? But I can also identify with the not belonging. My mother's from Jamaica. My father's from Trinidad. I grew up in Trinidad. But I find that here, obviously, you are, you know, I'm not going to be able to tick the African-American box. But I realize that now back home, I get resentment, because they're like, yeah, you've sold out. Yes. You know what my selling out is? I have one of the best jobs on NBC. So I have now sold out, because they look at me and they go, we see you, you know, broadcasting to 20 million people during the Olympic Games, and, you know, you don't mention Trinidad and Tobago every 5 minutes. And I go, really? Because that's my job. So I can identify with what's being said, because in a way you get sort of lost in this sort of ethnic purgatory. You don't belong to either one.
And you belong to both.
Right,
and,
even right, though and technically, and right, because technically I can tick three boxes with Jamaica,
and that's what I
and the United States. I've been here since I was 14, yeah, you know, and occasionally somebody will say that to me and try to exclude me from the whole U.S. thing, and I go, really? Because I know how much taxes I paid in this country. So
I love it when people call me, like, first of all, I love it when they call me a Jafakan. So I'm like, that's so not okay, because was born in Jamaica, thank you very much, at Nuttall Hospital, so I am a Jamaican, and I hate when they call me a Jamaican.
But the thing with Caribbean people that we do that other cultures don't do, we ostracize our children that happen to be born in America, and we try to disconnect them from our home culture. And then we try to make them stop embracing their Caribbean culture. An Italian, they could be five generations from Italy, never been there. You're Italian.
That's true.
You talk to a Jamaican child, that's a third generation Jamaican child. You're not Jamaican. Who told you you're Jamaican? You're American. Who told you you're Trinidadian?
Right.
How dare you like roti?
Even though they're entitled to a passport.
That's right. It's just amazing that we do that. And I don't know if it's a self hatred thing. I don't know if it's a disconnection thing or try to put ourselves in a different level. But it's all a part of that. That thing that we do that splinters our diaspora.
I thought it was only a Haitian thing, because working in the school system, the Hispanic parents, not only they make sure that the kids are learning Spanish fluently, make sure that they keep that culture, versus the Haitian American students, like, no, you got to learn English. It's a totally different box. But what Omar was saying differently, I think majority of us immigrant who come here, we are so excited about coming to America. I don't think we have any preconcept or pre anything on white Americans or black. So we're just excited to be here. But once you hear, it's that wake up call. You're like, wait, where's this coming from? Because I didn't know there was African American in America in certain ways. There was Italian. You know, we were just excited about coming here, trying to make a new life.
I didn't know that. I didn't even know I was dark until I came.
Know the N word was a slur until I got to this country.
Wow.
Yeah, there's no conversation about that.
And the thing about it, you know, Jill, is that, you know, the term African American is a little bit limiting for us as black people, right?
Yeah.
You know, because our kids need to have a fuller understanding in terms of who we are as a people, that our culture is not just the circumference of the United States. Our culture is the entire world. You have a country like Brazil that Atto just came back from that has the largest black population in the Western Hemisphere. You know, our kids don't learn this stuff, right? Marcus Garvey, who's still waiting on his commutation from President Obama. President Obama will be listening right now. Okay. Sign the petition.
Make it happen before you walk out, please.
You know, he was talking about, you know, Pan-African issues. You know, Stokely Carmichael from Trinidad and Tobago, from, you know, Howard University. Harry Belafonte, who funded the civil rights movement from Jamaica. I mean, you know, you played a song at the top of the hour. You know, there are major, major personalities that have participated. Hillary Clinton, who's now running for president. Shirley Chisholm from Barbados,
put her
her
on.
Family.
Right.
We can go on and on, a whole list of people. So our cultures are interconnected. You know, we need to just start, like my brother said earlier on, just, you know, compartmentalizing each other.
Right. But it's by design.
And I was going to say, A, it's by design. And B, in order for us to really preserve our history in that way, you know, I feel like we have to acknowledge the design that is in place for us to be so divided. I mean, it is... Robert on line one. Hi, welcome to Hot Talk.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm glad to be here, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Yo, you guys keep missing the point. It is God who can deliver the black people. You keep thinking it's another black person going to
deliver. We're not talking about deliverance. We are not talking about deliverance, Robert.
I'm already delivered.
Let me convey the point I'm trying to say.
Okay, quickly.
I keep trying to point out to you why certain blacks treat other blacks differently.
Because
it goes back to the more white you look, the better they treat you. The more black you look, you get treated worse.
Okay, stop. Okay, do I have to take a break? Dollar Bill. That's Hello? James Robert Hello? Dollar Bill. Hold that thought. I'm going to ask my panel that question because we are all shades up in here of brown. So I'm going to ask them that question when we come back from the break. Woo, I am Jill Tracy. This is Hot Talk 105. Yeah.